Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are a sub-science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking about neurodivergence or neurodiversity. Is it a trend that is increasing? More and more people online are saying that they have neurodiversity. What is going on here? We're also going to be talking about autism, really fascinating science information. And then we're at the end of the podcast going to be talking about new information about why plants are talking to each other and why balls, yeah, you heard that right, testicles are on the outside in humans and dogs. No, marsupials have their balls in front of their dicks.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that so, not to like shame them, but like it's kind of weird.
Isn't that so weird? No. It's nature, Greg. It's
yeah,
natural.
I know.
It's not but so like, weird. It's just different.
Elephants inside, horses outside, dogs outside, primates outside, seals inside. You could just, you know, it's like these testicles are all over the place.
Let's get there when we get there. Maybe you're neurodivergent.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So today we're talking about neurodivergence. It's something that I think we hear a lot more often recently. I feel like it's a term that has broke through into sort of popular culture.
And it is, upon research, there's a lot of talk about TikTok. I'm not getting those TikToks, but apparently
there's
a lot
of... Oh, I for sure am, yeah. Like, or just more, not necessarily discourse, but people openly talking and even just starting by saying like, oh, I'm neurodivergent, so this and this, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not necessarily the point of
that's the way
video.
It was described, but I haven't like literally seen them. I only got like... I don't know, like how to do a bench press. That's on me. I need to
that's when I'm like, have these moments where I'm like, am I neurodivergent? Because I get a lot of them.
Well, you watch one, maybe you watch many. I mean, I did type in neurodivergence on TikTok, so I am getting more now. But
Where do you want to start with this? Like, I figured we could start broadly with just like what it actually is.
Neurodiversity, by definition. So it is an umbrella term.
Yeah.
Of ASD, autism spectrum disorder, ADHD, dyslexia, and some other conditions all fall under the concept of being neurodivergent. Correct?
Yeah, those are kind of like the quote-unquote official disorders that people lump together for neurodiversity. But there's sort of a broader sense that like everybody's brain works differently. Some people have quirks in this way. Some people have quirks in that way. And that as a spectrum is neurodiversity. But I think it's rooted from the autism spectrum disorder.
But
it's kind of like where I think it kind of came from.
But it only like came about in the 1990s.
Yeah, this term, yeah.
Yeah, whereas that, like, that's important to know because, like, autism was first defined in 1911, right. Whereas neurodiversity was first defined in the 90s. So you get why all of a sudden you're hearing about it now because it's mm-hmm. new. It's a new term.
Yeah, well, okay. One important thing to know is that it is, like, not a medical term. So this is not something that you get, like, diagnosed with. It's not something that your doctor would necessarily... It's not that they wouldn't use it, but it's not an official medical term.
Wait, what do you mean, really?
Yeah, it's not considered a medical term. So you wouldn't see this in that regard. But in general language, I'm not saying a doctor couldn't use it to help describe that there's a spectrum of ways that brains work. And so in a sense, it's the counter to neurotypical. So if we have like a bell curve of like how on average people's brains function, we might find people who are outside of the norm for better or for worse in different ways. And I think this term was created to sort of be more inclusive and allow people to feel like it doesn't have to be considered like a disability or a disorder. A lot of times neurodivergence is an amazing part of society where some people have like amazing qualities that the quote unquote normal person wouldn't have.
Yeah. And the movement was weaved into the social justice movement mm-hmm. in order to sort of like understand that society is ableist and that in many ways, typical behaviors or like, they were defining ableist, and I was like, whoa. So it's like, you're ableist if you think that typical behaviors are superior.
Is better, yeah.
I was like, I've never really thought about the term ableist for some reason. It gets thrown around a lot, like for me when I listen to like comedy podcasts, like, you're being ableist, and they do it in like funny ways. But I was like, yeah, like, what does that mean? And it's like, oh, like the words they used were typical behaviors are superiors. Like, that's really interesting. I think a lot of people are ableist. Like,
yeah, and maybe unintentionally so.
Sorry, like, a lot of people are unintentionally ableist.
Because, you know, when you, in any particular domain, like you may be, like I may be able in one domain and not able in another. And so when you are in the category of like, you don't have to think, like I don't have a physical disability, I don't have to think about that. And so I think people just get in these bubbles where they're super ignorant.
Yeah.
The same goes with like queer issues. Like, because I'm queer, I can see a lot of these discrepancies and a lot of these unintentional, hopefully discriminatory actions. And it's just because people live in their bubble and aren't considering what that means. But it's exceptionally homophobic when someone thinks they're better because they're straight. Whereas it's just ignorant when somebody like isn't really thinking about it, but maybe inherently lives a heteronormative life without being like, oh, there are other challenges people face.
And ASD stands for autism spectrum disorder. So it's also about that word disorder. So mm-hmm. some people think that's inappropriate and it would like, it's disorder, like makes you seem like you are prioritizing typical behavior.
Yeah, and that you should try and fix a disorder. Right?
Yeah.
And
so then they're like, neurodiverse is maybe a better term. We'll get into that. It is juicy. Because then there's a lot of like interesting sort of like pushback.
Like
on
discourse
that.
Around it in many different ways, to be honest. So something else I was going to say is like part of its definition is that this is not something that's preventable. It's not treatable or curable, though it can be manageable. Again, it can be
so this
a
is
strength
where I get confused
or a
because,
weakness.
Well, I get confused because it's like, are you talking about autism spectrum disorder right now? Like in the most part, that is what people are alluding to.
Yes, but so, like remember that we have just like anxiety disorder, ADHD, like I guess people are saying a lot of times if you have autism spectrum disorder, this will likely be diagnosed when you're young. It could obviously be diagnosed much later, but many of these disorders get caught younger. And I think, what was your question?
No, I was just saying like you were kind of like describing to me autism spectrum disorder, but talking about neurodivergence. And I'm like, it is confusing because it's like...
Yeah, let's, for the purpose of our conversation, this is my take on it. Neurodivergent is a much broader term, which includes ASD.
Yeah.
People with autism, but it also includes like, it encapsulates this idea that all of our brains work differently, which is why it can be really a positive thing.
Yeah.
But some people are left confused thinking like, well... Yeah. Should we really be classifying everyone as neurodivergent then?
So like, let's talk about autism spectrum disorder. Because mm-hmm. that is, I think, for the most part, where a lot of people are going to be entering this conversation.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I don't know. There's lots of cool things I learned about that.
Yeah, me too. It's worth mentioning that autism spectrum disorder used to just be called autism. And there was then later on introduced like Asperger's, which was considered...
By Hans Asperger. I didn't know that.
Oh, me either.
It's a person. Yeah.
So I believe it's because it was classified as like high functioning autism.
Well, okay. Asperger said that people who with difficulties with social reactions and communication would have Asperger's, but they didn't have the same troubles as people at the time. This is 1943, who were quote unquote
autism. They didn't have the same what?
He felt that there was a discrepancy between people who had autism, who, again, I'm just saying this is 1943, mm-hmm. and this new group of mm-hmm. people who he described as having Asperger's, which meant that they actually had higher functioning when it came to language, cognitive function, and then he did call it high functioning autism.
Okay.
So it was like, he's like, but they still had the issues or quote unquote difficulties with social reactions and communication, but not with language and cognition.
Sure.
But then I didn't realize that like now saying someone has Asperger's is like completely wrong.
And yeah, it's don't been removed from yeah. like, that's why it's now called autism spectrum disorder.
Which makes sense. Like everything's on a spectrum.
Yeah.
It's not think two
it's
types.
The same. It's not the same, but it's like, you know, we're having this discourse around like being queer or gay or straight. It's like,
or an alcoholic.
Oh, fine. Yeah.
Alcohol use disorder yeah. as opposed to you're an alcoholic.
Well, I was like, that was a really sharp no, well, term.
To
but
me, that
right.
makes more sense. It's like, are you an alcoholic? Are you not an alcoholic? Do you have autism? Do you not have autism? It's like, no, that's so black and white. Yeah. It's like, do you have an alcohol use disorder? Mm-hmm. Do you have are you on the autism? Are you on the autism spectrum? Do you have an autism spectrum disorder?
Yeah. And so Asperger's has been removed and sort of like clumped yeah. back into that. And to me, I think neurodiversity, this is my personal take, is like an extension of that being like, okay, there are some, non-neurotypical activities that like are extreme and may cause like very difficult challenges. And then others that are like on the other far end are the things that are just like kind of quirky.
Yeah.
And everything in between that. Sometimes I think in general, when something's being called like a disorder, it's because there's like an actual challenge you have to work through and it's causing roadblocks or hurdles in your life. But I think the idea of neurodiversity is like we can also celebrate a lot of these and like just how we see diversity as a really positive thing. We can see like mental diversity as a positive thing as well.
But it is like learning about ASD was interesting. It's like brains of children with ASD, autism spectrum disorder, do develop differently. Like mm-hmm. they can use brain scans and like see the symptoms, see where the symptoms come from. For example, they have fewer connections in parts of the brain with social, like which involves mm-hmm. social interactions, and they have more interactions in parts of the brain with sensory, they feel things intensely. Mm-hmm. Sense, and then it's like, okay, you got diagnosed when you have learning difficulties, trouble with verbal and like eye contact. You do repetitive movements. Like these are common threads that actually link to the brain scan. So mm-hmm. it's like, okay, it's like
a measurable thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm like, that is important to remember. It isn't...
Yeah, this is some of the discourse I see around, and a couple of, we're going to like take some voice notes throughout, but some of them are around like, are some people just like self-diagnosing and is this a problem? And to some people it is. And on the other hand, it's like, maybe it's nice that more and more people can be educated, but obviously I think the discourse around TikTok in particular is like lots of these people are self-diagnosing themselves.
Do we want to do one of the calls?
Sure. We can like take and let me just set this up.
Yeah. Cause I do think it's interesting to hear from like, I don't think we have direct experience with this.
No. And okay. Yeah. Why don't we take our listener voice note from Jay.
So this is Hyena.
Yeah. Yeah. I've set this up, Greg. Don't worry. I promise it's going to work. Here we go.
Hi, so I'm someone who's undergoing tests for autism as a teenager, and I kind of think it would be pretty important to share my experience as someone who's still in school, because obviously, like, school is a very stressful place when you have, when you're neurodivergent, because it's a very loud place, and I think that's something I really struggle with. And also, like, teachers can be quite ignorant, so a lot of the times, like, my teachers will say, look me in the eyes when I'm talking to you, and obviously I can't really do that. Or they'll tell me to stop stimming in class, which I can't do because otherwise I'll get really stressed and I'll get like really anxious. And so it can be kind of an intimidating place to be. But I think that if you are able to get the help that you need, then it's really good. And all my friends have been really supportive since I've started kind of going through tests. And a lot of my friends are also autistic, so they've been able to give me a lot of tips on these kind of things. So I think that as long as you have good support, then it can be really, it can be a lot easier to manage than if you don't. But yeah, I don't know. I thought this might be important to share.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, stemming. Thank you so much, first of all, Jay, for sending that in. And everyone who sent in voice notes, like, we appreciate it so much. If you want to, it's asapscience.com/chat. We'll try and be ahead of the curve. And if you check our Instagram, we'll say, like, what topics are coming up. But
stemming is, like, the repetitive movement. Like, that's the name of that. When she said, like, when I'm stemming. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's, like, an important thing to know. Like, I used to babysit a person with ASD. And I remember that, them stemming. Like, they would move. When we were on the subway, they would, like hug themselves and, like, rub their arms. And, like, it was just, if I hadn't known, like, being like, stop that. Right, I was like, no, yeah. I was very much like, no, you have to do that. That's so those why, are things that are like, that's yeah, it's what so people important need to know about.
To hear from people. And I don't want to misgender Jay. Like, I'm not sure. It doesn't matter their gender, but you just said she. But I think, like, hearing their story and hearing other people's stories is part of this idea to me of, like, the word neurodiversity or neurodivergent being important, just like learning,
hearing these
things like stemming, like a lot of terms that I personally, I haven't grown up with anyone like that in my life or had like to help or be around or learn specific things.
Yeah, and the way that they were like, my teacher's like, look me in the eye. Like, it's just one of those things that it's just about knowing. No teacher would ever do that if they knew it was going to cause an issue.
I mean, like, yeah, we can't say no teacher, but of course, like most teachers want to accommodate their students.
Like, Miss, like the evil teacher from Matilda, or right? Whatever. Like, they're like that's not as a teacher. That's not when teachers have issues. They're not doing it on purpose. They're overwhelmed. They're like maybe they are uneducated or they don't understand. That's not the right thing to do. But that was interesting.
Yeah, and I think to me, it's just like so helpful to hear people's firsthand experiences and have it in media. Even if TikTok to some people doesn't count as, you know, like media, it is still like we're getting to see firsthand experience of people who have different levels of neurotypicalness or not, and can talk about like their needs and give us a general sense that like it's important to see the world as different from you.
And it's like what they were saying, it's like you just, this podcast is like, we have to talk about it. The TikToks are all about education. Like, it is helpful. Mm-hmm. The more people can understand, then the more that they can get the help at younger ages. And that only thing that I ever read about, there's no cure for ASD or for being neurodivergent, but the sooner you can get like help, the like less severe, quote unquote, it will be.
Yeah, it's more person. Manageable. Yeah. And that support is like having your teacher be educated on it. And even if your teacher is learning from their social media, what that means, they may actually be able to see their students differently and understand, like, even if someone falls outside the average, how can I accommodate them? I've seen X, Y, Z. Of course, it's going to depend. A lot of these conditions, or what's the right word to use here?
Is yeah, that, I was like, it's so hard. ASD.
Any like of
disorder?
These. Yeah, like, I don't like calling it a disorder, but I just want to mean like,
neurodivergent. It is so. All,
we don't want to be politically incorrect in any way, obviously. So hopefully everyone listening understands, like, we're still learning about this. But yeah, just to like know and see your class differently and know that they're all different. But even though they're kind of clumped under neurodiversity, I think like every individual's needs is slightly different, especially if it's more severe for them.
So what causes ASD? So it's genetic, like in many ways, at least in the scientific studies I found, that like if you are someone with ASD, your child is more likely to have ASD.
Yeah.
And then there was also a strong correlation between the age of the father.
Oh yeah, I like saw that too.
And this is completely anecdotal, but the kid who I babysat with ASD, the father was very old. So it's like that is obviously an anecdote, like, but it made me think when I was reading the study, I was like, oh my God, it was like a big part of their life. Like, he remarried, he had a younger wife, like, and it was just, I don't know. I'm just like in this moment, like, whoa, like they were like, there is a correlation between an older father and your kid with ASD. And like, that's important to know. A lot of people don't understand that this like what biological clock exists for men's sperm as it does the way that women stress about their biological clock. Like, men, you're not, that's such a weird part of society that people don't think about.
Which is like all the pressure comes on to
women. And it's like, I'm not saying that like being neurodivergent is a good or a bad thing, but it's like, if you need to understand that if there's these types of correlations, it's just like, it's just interesting. Mm-hmm. And just also knowing that there's like a genetic component, I think helps, like, it helps with awareness. It helps like with like the validity of neurodivergence. Mm-hmm. Like it is a thing and there's a reason for it.
One other thing I wanted to bring up, and it's related to our next caller or listener, what if we call them, is
we like, really went ham on these voice things.
It's it's fun to take them in.
Yeah, and, like, I know. I'm just like, them. It's like, wow, we're now become like a call in. We're like public. We're like, and come in to Z103. We got a caller coming in.
So how common is it? And one interesting thing is that like rates have gone up a lot in the last few decades. So I'm going to hit this call and then we can kind of talk about
the prevalence. Okay, Z103, hit that call.
Hi, I'm Tamara. I am one of the few Australians that has left listening to the Side Note podcast. I work in disability support, so I work with lots of people who are neurodivergent, and I am neurodivergent myself. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on the seeming increase of diagnosis of people who have neurodivergent disorders such as autism, ADHD, and so on. Are there actually more cases, or is it just a phenomenon where everyone's getting diagnosed now? What's the science behind it?
Whoa. Thanks. Interesting. I feel so bad. I'm like,
oh, like
Australians are actually
like,
so the reason
hanging in there.
So the reason
us.
she's and they're the few Australians listening is because I do absolutely go to town ripping on Australia quite often. I say they're racist. I say they're ignorant. I say they have to, if I meet one, they have to prove to me that they're a good person before I'll say like horrible, horrible things. So like, thank you for listening. I'm so sorry. I'm obviously joking.
I'm sorry on Greg's
and
behalf.
Every time I make those jokes, I'm just Australia. Like, never think about someone in Australia just being like, wow, this person hates my culture. But you're really easy to make fun of because you're all so exuberant and extremely white. Okay.
As are we Canadians.
Okay,
to the question. So I was looking into the stats, like they say around 1% of the world falls into this neurodivergent spectrum. However,
wow, interesting.
In the US and UK, or in particular in like high income countries, it's a lot higher. So it's between 2.4 to 10% when they look at US wow. and UK studies.
But that's probably diagnosed.
Okay, well, this yeah, is so where obviously we've seen a large increase in the last couple of decades. So in the year 2000, it was one. This is in America. It was one in 150 people would have been diagnosed. And now it's one in 36. So
wow.
That's like a pretty huge
that is,
change.
Yeah.
That one in 36 was in 2020, that number.
But that to me, from what I saw, was explained by the increase in diagnosis. And people think it's a good thing.
Explained by what?
That people are having more awareness. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's not.
That is the increase in diagnosis, though, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, sorry. It's not like something is happening that's right. creating mm-hmm. more neurodivergence.
Right.
Which I think is what some people might think.
Yeah.
The science says that it's that in these wealthier countries, it's probably about systems of diagnosis mm-hmm. becoming better.
It reminds me, honestly, of even... like I hope these comparisons are okay, but you know when you see the graph of like left-handedness, or even now you're seeing like the rates of queer people in younger populations have like gone up a lot, but it's like eventually it will plateau. These things have become less stigmatized. Mm-hmm. People have
what's
learned
the left-hand thing.
The left-hand thing is like being left-handed used to be associated with like being the devil or something, and so rates of left-handedness were way lower, and then at some point they kind of spiked. And now it's come to a point where like it's no one cares if you're left or right handed. So it's like probably averaged out to how many people are actually left handed now naturally.
So they're like the amount of queer people is finite. It's always existed. It's been the same. But only now it seems like more because we're like, we're gay.
Yeah, and everyone's more comfortable and there's way more education and people are OK being like, I'm maybe bi or maybe I'm pan or maybe I'm something in between because I've heard of these things.
So the neurodivergent number is probably higher than 1 out of 100 or 1%.
Yeah, or I mean, higher than the 1 out of 150. Like, even in the last two decades, we're seeing, okay, wow, so many people are now being diagnosed. And, you know, of course, there's probably diagnoses here and there that catch it wrong or get it wrong. But I think, in general, it's probably just coming to the place where we're actually being able to recognize these symptoms. And that's a good thing, because then we get to, like, help people in any way that they can.
Because the only way that you can get helped is... like to have a diagnosis and then have people work around helping you. But also there's a lot more like boys than girls.
Oh yeah, it's I think four times more men than women.
But there is a theory and an understanding, at least from the studies I read, that girls are better at hiding it, mm-hmm. and they're better at masking in general, and they answer questions on the tests that are needed, like in ways that they think should be the right way. Like, and they also even will study them in specific groups, and girls are just better at, it kind of made me laugh because it's just like society as a whole. It's like girls are probably better at, like,
or you know, forced to do it.
Yeah. They like have to learn at a young age how to like literally fit in and not like make a stir or whatever. Mm. And so that's what they think is, it's not that girls have it less for like the genetic or brain scan reasons. It's that when it comes to the like physical testing, they're better at hiding it, which I thought was like really interesting.
Yeah.
It's not a sex determined genetic thing.
Yeah.
From any sort of like science that they understand currently.
Mm-hmm. And obviously there's still much research to be done. Like those kind of associations they see, and they're still investigating, like, is there actually differences? Are people predisposed to it? Is it genetic? Like, yes, we're getting answers to some of these questions, but of course there's so much variability.
Oh yeah. And it's not caused by autism.
Like, oh, you mean, I mean, by sorry, vaccines.
Yeah. There was like, that is a funny part of this research that I just like forgot about, but there was a time when like we had to make videos about that. Like it was like, that was a serious issue that I really do think has gone by the wayside, because yeah, the one like messed up study, the guy has been like completely like, I'm like, is he like in jail? He was like abolished by all medical communities. The like article that he managed to get published was retracted like in an insane way. So like there was one study published that made everyone go a little wild about it. But yeah, vaccines don't cause it. C-sections don't cause it. Plastics don't cause it. The only thing they really know is it's like there's some sort of genetic component right now, but it's so complicated anyways that...
And the spectrum right now, I think, is also so broad. Like if we're talking about neurodivergence, including ADHD and anxiety and autism spectrum disorder, like of course those could have varying, hugely different impact, like things that might quote unquote cause them.
Yeah.
So I think like, when we're looking into like, is there a reason for these things? We have to, I think, zoom in first of all on one specific condition and then start to see like, are there trends? But I think even within something like autism spectrum disorder, there's lots of possibilities and you can end up on varying levels of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. But one study I said that there was an increase in diagnosis, like to get to this person's sort of question. In the past 20 years, 5 times increase in the US, 8 times in the UK, and they do think it's due to higher awareness and better screening. So like it is likely that.
Yeah. And I want to say for myself, like, because there's sort of this sentiment out there like, oh, now everyone's just calling themselves neurodivergent.
So that is a thing.
For sure. Yeah. Okay, but it's kind of it's happening with like queerness as well. Like, oh, now everyone's identifying like in that sense, in the queerness, it's like conservatives being like, oh, now they're like brainwashing kids into making them think that they're gay or bisexual or whatever. And it's that same sort of sentiment for this, like, oh, everyone's just like taking on this thing. And of course, like lots of people will say they are and they haven't been diagnosed. But to me, is that such a big deal?
Like, okay, so, here we go.
Okay, no, I oh my God, kind I'm of like, know okay. where you're going to go with this, and I will talk about that. But I think on the whole, for people to be educated about it, care about it, and understand the potential differences, they may not be on like a really severe form of the spectrum, but to be able to see it for the first time might liberate someone from an individual level.
Yeah.
I think maybe what you're going to get at.
Well, okay, no, this isn't necessarily my thoughts, but I was like trying to understand it more. And then I just was like linked to different articles, one by this guy like Tom Clements that I guess a lot of people probably like don't like. I don't know, just like that's what I got.
Okay.
But okay, his point was that people who are severely autistic have like an extremely challenging life, especially people who like need caregivers. Mm-hmm. And they probably aren't the ones on TikTok talking about it.
Yeah.
And therefore, like it says here, that's like people severely autistic, people have a skewed
vision of who is on the spectrum, I guess, right?
Yeah, like, and he said
if you have the ability to film yourself and talk about it, it's a certain, you're on the spectrum in a very different place than somebody who is nonverbal and like can't, like needs a caretaker.
Yeah, essentially saying that the people who are most in need are the ones getting left behind if it in becomes like the cultural, his quote unquote saying that it's sort of like a fashionable label.
Okay.
So I was like, that's obviously really intense words, but we did have a call in from someone sort of alluding to something like that. Mm-hmm. Like this idea that like everyone's making it their personality, mm-hmm. and like leading with it and like all these things where it's like, okay, this is like intensity that I didn't understand as someone who doesn't like, I don't define myself as neurodivergent, nor have I had that much experience. Mm-hmm. But then I was thinking about like this kid that I babysat. Like he was had severe ASD, I guess is what it was called at the time. They just said autism. And like it was truly my high school job. Like I got paid so much money like after him because he was so challenging. Mm-hmm. Like in retrospect, and like even during the time, I was like, this is so easy. Like he was amazing. He was so fun. But it was like I can't imagine what it was like to be his parent. And like if I went on like the subway in TTC in Toronto with him, I always would have to. It was like a really intense experience. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't like now when I take my nephew on the TTC, I'm so excited. It's just fun. Like I always had intense anxiety if I he left his house and wasn't just like playing video games or even changing from a video game to having to like take him swimming. It was like, okay, I need to spend like an hour like being like using all these tactics to, it's just like, okay, this is like this person and this family is dealing with this thing that I could imagine if they were on TikTok at the time. And there was some, actually know, but if there was some like very like high functioning, like gorgeous person being like taking
the label.
Yeah. That's all. I just was reading it and was like, okay, it reminded me of how much effort and like that person who I babysat has come a long way. And like, I think that, I would be so curious at what they thought.
It's kind of like there is like a difference between normalizing something, which is good, and kind of like romanticizing it, or like,
and does it end up alienating the people? Very interesting sentiment, I think, as we progress in society about everything. Like I was like, I don't know how to describe what I'm saying. I feel like the like 2016 Trump era, there was a very black and white, like liberal versus conservative. Mm-hmm. Blah, and it feels like things have evolved to a point where it's like, what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that like, if you think about like even like trans issues, like I've heard some really interesting points from trans people being like the they them like discussion being taken over by people who aren't even dealing with
that oppression or that
like trans dysmorphia.
Right. Yeah.
And so then there's like a trans person who's like, I understand my lived experience and I'm going through hormone therapy, or I'm not, or I'm doing these severe things. But then there's like some person who doesn't seemingly have any,
almost feels like they're dysphoria, co-opting it,
but it's like, I'm them. And then it's like, oh my God. And then all of a sudden you're like, it's a very conservative, sorry, quote unquote, like Trump time conservative thing to be like, you're questioning them saying they, them.
Totally.
But it's like, oh, it's because there is a person who's having gender dysphoria, who's going through a serious like understanding of themselves. And then now they're looking at people who aren't going through that, who are saying that they're, it's just like, okay, interesting. Like now that we're progressing, it's
kind of
like
to me, the in-group out-group, like sometimes we can say like, there's no such thing as a fact in science, but then it comes to like the larger thing and it's like, no, but we know like climate change is happening and we know vaccines don't cause autism and we know this and that.
Yes,
but like if we're talking to our in-group, totally, we get to go like, but like, we also understand that like science is constantly evolving.
What I was describing was a queer understanding.
Yeah, but then it's like when you start to like bringing in like really conservative people, you're like, no, you're not allowed to say.
No, like, it's like, well, it's because it's like, oh, that's actually vitriolic hatred.
Yeah.
And it's ignorant and it's scary.
So I think the in group of this is people who fall on the spectrum saying, look, some people on this spectrum, like the fear is like,
oh, this
some
is
people
so
never want to say anything bad about autism because they're like, everyone's beautiful, everyone's diverse, that's great.
Yeah.
But I think people who deal with it sometimes are like, but sometimes it's really challenging, and stop pretending that it's great because there are people on the spectrum who need constant support, constant help. And by normalizing or romanticizing it so much, you risk like their stake in this. But to me, but that's it, like, it's, A, we don't have a stake in this argument because neither of us like experienced this.
Yeah.
But to me, that's what it is. It's like people within the community kind trying to suss out like, how do we discuss it? And then there's also the broader discussion of like, yeah, but if you're just going to be ableist, then don't say anything bad about us.
Yeah, it is so... It's so like an online social media time thing because it's like all about people's opinions and nuance. And the only reason we can feel this way is because we know so much about people's opinions because of like Twitter or whatever.
Yeah.
Like it actually is a product of social media. I think even this conversation about neurodivergence being like a quote unquote issue is only because of TikTok. Mm-hmm. It's only because like this Tom Clements guy saw someone maybe glorifying it and felt like a certain way. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, that is, I think, a big issue with a lot of like even conservatives and people's things towards liberals. They're just seeing people online and cherry picking someone who might be
like
claiming something they're not or something, which is like really interesting. It's like, it is, I agree that it's an in-group thing,
but it's
that out-group people can view sort of like an inauthenticity there and then like hang on to it and it doesn't help the movement. Whereas other people are saying that like this Tom Clements guy is completely off, that any sort of person claiming neurodivergence is helping the movement. Like I do think I don't know where I fall fully, but it's like, I think in the past I would have been like, it helps no matter what. Like, it's just like, that was so me in like 2018.
Well, that's why I think like ultimately we're not the voices to say.
No. I'm thinking more about like queer issues and like claiming they, them and stuff. And just being like, it's just so interesting. I never thought there would be any damage to anyone claiming something like queer. I'd be like, awesome. Someone's queer. It's like only recently like have I started to be like, oh wow, there could be some issues with that. I don't actually even know if that's true or not. It's just something I've like questioned.
Yeah,
which is cool. It's about like being alive.
I think
and like
both
thinking
can
more.
Exist. I think like in any social or political movement, you can have very strong different opinions on the right way to discuss like a liberation movement for any marginalized group.
Yeah.
Even if you look back through history for like queer communities, like there was a big dissension between like, should gay or queer people even want marriage? Like a lot of people fought for that, and there's communities that were like, that, why are we trying to be straight, right? So like, okay, whatever happened, but at the time it's like, even though they're all fighting for liberation, they view it through a different lens.
And it is like the exact correlation with neurodivergence. Like the history of it is completely linked to like queer social justice movements. Like the actual term was developed like in tandem with the queer like liberation movement. So it's like, because they are actually linked. It's interesting. Like
marginalized communities all end up being linked by nature of like being ostracized and treated differently in society.
It was so interesting. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't take any tests. I don't think I'm neurodivergent. Like I was like, do you have any part of you that thing? Like
only very loosely sometimes in that kind of TikTok-y way. You know, I know I don't have like severe challenges, but when it comes to like anxiety and that sort of thing, I'm like, okay, if that's gonna clump me into a neurodivergent personality or like overthinking or like ruminating for like a really long time, fine. But like I can handle myself. I don't need care. I don't like not that I don't should like I need therapy and all those things, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the spectrum is broad and I don't want to claim. I've never been tested. I've never whatever, but
because you think like
person.
That like diagnosis involves like, for example, avoiding eye contact, repetitive movements, obsessive interest, difficulties with emotional control, sensitivity to light, touch, and noise.
This is for ASD.
This is for ASD. It's like you can see how someone can I find eye contact hard. Like, so you can see how someone can like
things that are very human.
Yeah. Sensitivity to light, touch, and noise. Like you're always like using your sensitivity to noise as like why like I should be less more quiet in a restaurant. But that's like a very normal thing and could be so about so much more, but you could see how maybe it's like, oh, if you claim it, does it give you more validity or something? Yeah. Like it's
that's why I think from the individual perspective it can be empowering to sort of see it be like, I feel different, but you know what, that's okay. And like the last thing I sort of wanted to say about like more and more people having it, I think there's also like a bit of a skewed vision because like 1% of people at the low number we're saying over the world is like 80 million people.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So we're talking about, and like that's also just in like one category. Like there might be neurodivergence in like a specific way. Every now and then I see a TikTok that like gets me so much. It's like an anxious person being like, do you ever experience this, this, and this? And then there's just like 100,000 people being like, oh my God, I have this exact thing. And I'll ask you and you'll be like, I never experienced that. So
like what?
Well, just different kind of weird neurotic anxieties. You know what I mean? And we're just like,
you do different. Always think that you're about to die or be killed.
Yeah. And then I'm like, and there's hundreds of thousands of other people online. Yeah. And so it gives you this bubble or this world where you see so many people engaging with it. But like 1% is millions and millions and millions of people. On top of the fact that like the spectrum is so broad that it probably
includes, and diagnosis like, is getting better too.
Yeah. Anyway.
Interesting. Whoa. Yeah, that was so interesting. So, I was going to be like, call in, but it's like, no, we already, like they already did.
Yeah, no. Well, thank you guys for sending your voice notes. If you are interested in sending those in on our topics, like we'll try and put them on our Instagram stories as they're coming up for you to send it in at asapscience.com/chat. Otherwise, we'll take
Instagram is at asapscience hot take.
Instagram. No. Oh, yeah.
Like if you want to, and then we'll take a break. It's so funny. We have a new format. I'm like freaking out.
We're going to take a break.
But we're still doing a comment corner at the end, right?
Oh, if you want to.
Yeah.
Like that's a non-related comment corner. Okay. Yeah, sure. We'll do that and our What'd You Learn This Week's right when we come back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
Damn, I'm so turned upside down. I'm like, what I thought that should have said study time. Like, I'm so lost. It's just like we switched the format.
We'll
and
figure
like,
it out. My What'd You Learn This Week is about plants that were caught on film talking to each other.
Oh my God, I just picture like that, like Mario, like,
or like Toy Story, like then like waking up and no humans are around.
No, what are that? What's
like the chomp chomps or whatever?
Yeah, is that what they're called?
Piranhas.
They look like the way you draw a mushroom if you're drawing a cartoon mushroom, but they have teeth.
Yeah.
Piranhas. Chomp chomps? That's what they're called.
I don't know.
Honestly,
which is
sometimes
which.
With Mario, I'm like, we could be a little more creative.
Chomp chomp.
I can't believe Nintendo ended up with like two Italian
plumbers.
Oh no,
chomp chomps like these ones. The like ball and chain.
Just wanna be a ball and chain.
Mario. I think it is called a piranha plant. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I guess that's a little creative, like a piranha bit of plant. Okay. Anyways, that's what I'm picturing when I'm picturing them talking to each other, but go off.
Okay. So like after I wrote this out, I was like, it's not the best What Did You Learn This Week for a podcast, but I kind of want to make a video about it. So I wanted to share it because the thing is visual. So they obviously like scientists have known that plants communicate via
chemicals
in the air, both in terms of like protecting themselves and communicating. So like if there's insects on them or they're damaged, they release signals. But what they don't understand is like, how do they receive those signals? Like when one plant gives it away, what's actually happening?
They don't have like, okay, continue.
Right. So basically they like got a bunch of insects to attack plants and then had plants that were protected from that. And then they like rigged them up to be fluorescent whenever there was like a calcium, what do you say, like a calcium signaling,
like a gradient,
which is like how human cells communicate as well. And basically,
isn't that crazy? Like all of our neurons are just like calcium and like going in and out of channels.
On and off our computers.
Yeah, truly it's like zeros and ones, but like with calcium channels in your neurons. And when you learn that in biochemistry, it is existentially scary. Continue.
So basically, they then were able to discover, okay, could see the plants firing. So it like a chemical would hit the area of a leaf. And the coolest part is seeing the video where the leaf like shoots a bolt of fluorescence down it. So like one signal triggers like
piranha
plant
as fuck.
Yeah. And then they were able to slowly isolate what are the actual chemicals that are being released. So they found two specific ones, Z3-HAL and E2-HAL. Those triggered the calcium signaling pathways. And then they were able to identify from that specific like cells that are called guard cells that are like the triggering source. Yeah, guard cells exist in cells, but they are the ones like, that happen first, and then the rest of the cells will like fire off.
So it's how they like received the communication that they found out.
That's like cool. What the chemicals were that were triggering it, in at least in these specific plants, and then like how that looked. If you look it up, you'll probably see like a short little video of the plant in fluorescent, like under a microscope lighting up, which I thought was really cool.
Whoa.
Plants talk, y'all.
So they only ever knew before that they released the chemicals, but not how they like responded to them.
Yeah, like the
because that is that sort of like classic like 5 years ago pop science like
plants talk to each other.
Trees are talking to each other like you must love them. And it was actually like, okay, true.
Yeah.
But I never thought about how they were only talking about the release of the chemicals.
Yeah.
And now they're like, this is how they, oh, that's crazy.
That.
Everything is so much smarter than we think. It's like, we're slowly just going to know enough science to be like, oh, we are the dumbest ones. It's like, oh, are we the only ones that are actually like ruining the planet?
Yeah, it's also like, oh, consciousness only exists in one species. Yeah, because it's bad. Okay,
whoa,
I went too far.
What? Wait, did you read something? Because that is a thing.
Yeah, no. Well,
no, that was a new thing.
What do you mean?
There's like a new like sort of trend, or it was like, you know when you like are, okay, not everyone's science communicators like us, but if you look up like science on a general day, there'll be like 20 articles about one thing that has captured the imagination.
Okay.
And that was, it was like a consciousness scientist there was saying like that humans are killing ourselves.
Oh.
That like our advancements are officially killing ourselves. Hmm. Like it was like a weird consciousness, super heady PhD neuroscientist argument for something that's very obvious, which is the climate crisis. Okay. But it was saying like,
right,
it's actually the product of our consciousness, right, that has created
this condition,
the thing that is going to kill us.
Yeah. I hadn't read that. I mean, I guess I sort of meant,
but you
like,
just said it.
Yeah, from like, you know,
intuition,
a Buddhist perspective, I was trying to think, whoa, like, it's often like consciousness and forethought and all these things are what make humans human, and they're amazing, but they cause also humans a lot of strife and problems, both like internally and, as you're saying, externally in the world.
Oh, you mean like the pain of knowing what the future and the past and the...
No, I also just mean like looking at, we basically class every other creature on this planet with not being able to like think, like to be able to predict,
yeah, which, and
to,
is so which rude.
May not be true, but like thinking of a tree, you're like, why has these species that have been around forever like not developed consciousness?
It's like, and it's like, maybe,
or maybe it's because it's like it doesn't help a species survive long term. We are an
experiment. We're like actually on such different pages. I'm like, no, they do, and you're like, no, they don't, and that's like interesting. The actual concept of consciousness is the issue in your head.
It's like we're an evolutionary experiment.
Whereas I'm like, they maybe are conscious.
Oh, fine.
Whoa.
Consciousness is a different, yeah, like what you mean by that.
Okay, we should write. Do we want to do an episode on consciousness? We need to do like four. Because this is a huge thing in science, which is consciousness.
Yeah, write it down.
Well, I always think of it as like, it kind of sounds just very like guy on mushrooms talking about nothing, like consciousness. But it's so scientific. Mm. And it's kind of like quantum mechanics and that like not everything's adding up. Mm. And like there will be like a staunch like white British guy with a beard who's like, this is consciousness. And then there'll be like some other like Kenyan scientist who's like, you are an evil and that's wrong. Like they're like actually like people have like,
where are you getting this narrative?
I just read a bunch of stuff about
okay.
it. People have strong opinion. It's like it's the type of science where there's not enough information to have an answer. So when people build their own theories and other people try and tear them down, they get really like personally attacked.
Fair.
Because they want to be the Einstein of consciousness. Like they want the future to look back at them and be like you were the one. But then someone else is going, everything you're saying is so ridiculous for this reason. And it's like very scientific.
Academic drama.
Yeah, it's like the best kind. In my opinion, it really is. And it's like about the consciousness and these like insane things. But yeah, I do think like, I'm like, squirrels hide their nuts for the winter. Like,
but some people would argue that that's just instinct. They don't think about it.
Doesn't that seem so rude? Like if I was a squirrel, I'd be like, you're so rude. I'm literally hiding this stuff. Like I know you tell me where 1,000 nuts that you hit are. Like maybe you're not conscious human because you can't find your keys.
No, you're right. Like, and we define things to like suit us as superior often.
Yeah, and it's like birds have been evolved way longer than us, and mm-hmm. they have magneto. They're literally in tune with the magnetoreception of the earth. I don't know, like, the magnets of the earth, but like that chickadee does. So
they say dogs know that too. They poop in alignment with it.
Exactly. I mean, I
allegedly
at, of all of the things when I look at Ernie, I'm like, that's not evolved. But yeah, like,
I take that back because I think there's been like some studies that debunked. Or I want to look into that. I think it's like on thing? Average they do like face a certain direction when they're pooping that they're like they must be feeling the magnetic. I haven't looked into this wow. in a long time. So just like I don't want to like spread misinformation. So just like
I would love that. If humans had to like tilt themselves poop around the bowl to shit a certain way. Okay, so mine's about balls, aka cute. Testicles. Cute, eh?
Oh, like it was a joke.
Oh.
Actually,
do you find
decide.
Balls attractive? Because like so many people are like, ew, balls. And I'm always like, I don't mind.
You know, it's weird. Hit or miss for me. Some are nice and some are not.
Wow. Well, okay. Why are testicles on the outside in humans? Truly another thing like consciousness, scientists debating this for years.
Just as important. Well, it probably is actually.
The theory, it is actually extremely important because of like the reproductive like importance of sperm mm-hmm. and then balls. Like it is a hilarious appendage of a human, like a naked man standing in front of you as an alien. It's like, so what are those things about? Like that is the most odd part of the body. Like even female vaginas and like or anything in between's vaginas and breasts are less like literally in your face.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that thing is on the outside. What is going on? But one of the theories is that like bigger balls were sexually selective.
Mm. And because they were like attractive.
I'm like curious. I'm like, when you say attractive balls, are you thinking bigger?
I guess.
Because that is like,
but it's
one,
not like I
it's
want
been
like
debunked,
like
but
huge balls.
No, I know. The theory, which is not true, but again,
I don't
want
to say what makes it attractive to me.
Oh my God. Wait, really?
I'll tell you off the pod.
Like one lower than another?
Yeah. No.
Really? No, come on. We're open book. I'll tell you what I think is attractive. I do think big, I guess. Yeah, droopy.
Yeah, whoa. But if they were like too big, I'd be like that. That's
no, like
I
don't
want.
Mean like absolutely abnormal, like a foot long, like Guinness World Records. I just mean like...
No, I don't know. I got to think about this question more. Move on.
Okay. Wow. It's like such a whiplash from like a very serious neurodivergence conversation to like, what kind of balls do you like the most? So this is a debunked theory and some poor scientist probably did die and like everyone was like, you're not right. But he was like that the bigger balls meant they had enough energy and resources to have big balls. So like people were attracted to big balls, but that's not the reason they're outside. And one hypothesis that I had never heard of is the galloping hypothesis, which is that animals whose mobility is characterized by quick movements, like humans, like horses, like dogs, like primates, have them on the outside. Because if they were inside, the internal pressure of like jumping so fast, they would like explode. And so they slowly, well, that's an exaggeration because obviously it's evolution. Like slowly they evolved to be in a scrotum so that we could like bounce around. And like spear. And like, that's so funny. Like literally bouncing balls.
Because I'm trying
like
to think
the
like
point.
Other animals that don't have it on the outside, like elephants or something.
Yeah.
I guess they're just like not bouncing around enough.
That was a great example is the elephant that just trots along. And if it
bounces. They jump, they run sometimes, but I guess it's
yeah,
like not.
Yeah, but if they jump, so. Maybe their internal balls would yeah. break. But it is, they do use, they talk about elephants a lot in testicles being outside because the theory is most accurately of around the temperature of the need to create sperm. It does in many ways have to be lower. So like when we left the water, like all of our ancestors is when they think endothermy, which is creating your own internal like heat became so important that it has to do with something like that. So elephants also are animals that had to deal with it and they noticed that they are like cooler, quote unquote, on the inside. Mm. So like maybe they didn't come out. Same with seals. Like whereas there's other animals and then there's other like ours come out before birth.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're like born, yeah. like the balls are out, whereas other animals like come out after later. Birth. Huh. Marsupials have balls in front of their dicks.
Wow.
Like the ball concept is like truly all over the place and it's like kind of interesting and like I get why scientists are obsessed with it, but it is like to us as humans with society being like are like lol, like you're a ball researcher, like crazy. But it was like people are up in arms about the real reason and I don't think anyone will know
ever. And you being like every scientist wants to like get it right, I just think long term we don't know anything. Like even Einstein, I think, in 2000 years. No, I know, but for like 100 years. Don't you think in like 5,000 years, they're going to be like, yeah, they didn't know anything.
Oh my God. I don't know about Einstein. Some of those principles of physics, I think, are pretty amazingly true.
Think of.
I do sometimes think of like aliens coming Homo and being
sapiens
like,
100,000 years ago and them imagining something they did would still have any relevance today.
I know, but I have faith.
I just think we don't know anything. Like, think of, we live literally in an infinite universe and we barely even know why we sleep.
I always think about what would happen like at MIT if the aliens came and then were like, you got physics wrong. Like, I always think about that. I'm like, it would be wild to watch these like engineering bros lose their mind. Cause I do think that they are actually in many ways right.
I mean, a lot of it's just constructs for us to build upon.
It would really hurt some egos in Silicon Valley if that.
If they were just like, yeah, you got it all wrong.
Yeah, or just like you're like fundamentally off with all of your equations. In fact, the math you're doing is like, it's interesting that it's work for you guys, but it's like completely like non-existent.
But that is like what happens. Like we create these systems and rules and laws that work. And then suddenly we're like, oh, but except for when things are really little or really big, we have to like literally reinvent everything. Yeah. We're currently like, we do not know how to bring together like gravity and these ideas.
I know. Like, I think that like we will learn.
Yeah. But then I think they'll look back and be like, yeah, that your cute little equation like worked when you only looked at like throwing a ball.
There's so many. Now is when you need to aesopscience.com/chat us. Like we are hurt. That is like,
I'm talking,
we're swinging big. We're swinging big.
We're all wrong and we will never know anything.
Because we'll be dead from climate crisis or the sun.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that too. Shall we do one last comment corner?
Oh, yeah. Go off.
You want to do?
Yeah.
Okay. Comment corner.
Hey, ASAP Science.
What's up? It's Leah and Teresa, and we were wondering what your opinion is on the Toronto gay club scene.
Oh my god. I thought they were gonna ask us about consciousness. I was like, oh god, we're gonna have to get deep. Now this is some nice shallow playing, the gay club scene.
It's like, I'm too old.
Wait, you've never been a clubber. I've always had to drag
only
you to thine
when
club.
We like travel, then I'm like, I'll go to a club. But I'm like, what club do I go to in Toronto? Like,
yeah,
I feel
so
that I'm pretty detached.
That is actually a really good question. And now I am like, we are old because in the past, what we would have gone to like Fly Nightclub. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just like embarrassing that out loud. We used to go to that Fly Nightclub for Grapefruit Night. It was like the only night where like us twinks were like allowed in and like kind of weren't just like abolished because we didn't have like muscles. And it was like, it was the club from Queer as Folk and it was really fun and it was decades ago. So we need to move on from that. Mm-hmm. We constantly say that the West End of Toronto needs a queer bar. Mm-hmm. But now there are some, like there's one called $3 Bill that just opened. Mm-hmm. Like the idea that we had, we're like, we need to open this. Like people
are on
it. Yeah,
because the West End used to have a couple
Peaches?
Queer. Yeah, yeah. There are spaces now, which is nice. It's popping up. But
they're not clubs.
Yeah, they're not clubs.
And like we seem to, whenever there is like a quote unquote gay party, go to this like Stockyards place that I call.
Oh, true.
That I call Berlin. Like,
yeah, we go to Berlin.
There's like this weird like
in the
building that like every sort of like queer or gay adjacent parties, like it's at the blah blah blah, and it's just like, I guess like a factory was abandoned and so now everyone does parties.
Yeah,
there.
Like you guys can tell us because I feel like I don't go to specific clubs, but what ends up happening, especially around Pride, is that there's events that end up renting out spaces that will end up going.
But
to,
that's like a sign that maybe
that's
there's
true.
Not and like,
yeah, I think that might be for a lot of people what their experience is as well. Like it's the night you're going to, and then they probably found a cool space on like Geary or something.
The other part of Toronto I call Berlin, Geary Street, our Berlin. Actually, yeah, I've been to like, and we are old, so like.
We're actually not that old.
No, but we're 35. And so like bringing up clubbing like to many people who are like sitting with their two kids listening are like, you're sad. But like we're gay men. So we just have like, we do have like a sad life where we have to like keep partying. But we definitely don't party as much. But I have gone to like club nights like on Geary. And I am like, okay, I am old. Like there is like a club queer scene that is like very mixed, very like, I was
like young.
It was young, but it was also like, wait, are these people straight? Are they bi or whatever? Mm. Whereas like when we go to those like dumb gay events. It's like 40,000 men.
Gay men.
Yeah. And it's like, they are, I don't feel old.
Teach
I feel
us,
our
like, where,
age.
Where A, as at, or at our age, would we be accepted to go to like a, yeah, I would love to be at more parties with just like more women and queer people, but also don't want to like impose on spaces where like men are not wanted.
This is the plight of being a gay man, is that like,
especially like alternative.
Yeah. And it's like
some gay men could care less and they just only want to be surrounded by men.
Yeah. A lot of them are like that. This is what I mean. The plight of being a gay man is like, it's not cool anymore, folks. Like, it is like, I know you're asking us about queer club scene or whatever. And it's just like, where the gay men are at, it's like maybe run in the other direction. And that's just my opinion. As I do go on a lot of like homophobic rants on this podcast.
Greg, you need to be careful.
But no, I don't.
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I do not need to be careful. I think gay men have a lot of owning up to do.
Fair.
Because I do think it's like, okay, you find a really cool queer space in Toronto. You let the gay men show up. It's ruined. Mm. Truly, they're going to take their shirts off. They're going to do their... But when you go... You've actually really opened a can of worms. When we go to those spaces, I'm actually like, why are there 20,000 35 to 40-year-old men who are on steroids in Toronto? Like, where did these people come from? And then you'll talk to one. They'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm a lawyer on Bay Street. I'm like, okay, well, then don't let them into the queer bar. Because, like, here we... You know what I mean? Like, it is interesting, that push and pull.
Yeah. I mean, what I'll say, though, is, like, I'd rather be there than the few times I've had to go to a straight bar and they're, like, doing bottle service. Yeah. And they're, like, firecrackers. Yeah, and people are like, that, to me, is, like, my worst nightmare. Like, I'd rather be at a basic gay bar.
But a basic gay bar is not that far from that anymore.
No, you're right.
And, in fact, sometimes I'm like, I'll see people like on social media, like post like after one of those gay events and be like, I'm so happy that Toronto has space for queer nights. It's like, that wasn't that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, that was
like, that's not queer.
Like white supremacy as a party.
Oh my God.
No, but I'm just like, it is like, it's like, don't claim that that's what that was. Like, don't pretend you're part of like, I am like going on a legitimate tirade. So what I want to do an upcoming episode on, and you could call in, and I found a really cool study, is about internalized homophobia. Mm-hmm. Because I do think, although I'm going on these homophobic tirades, I do think internalized homophobia is still a huge issue. And I think there's a lot more research on it.
Totally.
And I think
especially
it's what creates
gay men.
Yes. And I'm like, I know I'm making fun of gay men. And in this moment, I'm like, we need to do a video because I do feel bad, because it's coming out of these insecure places. Mm-hmm. And it's manifesting as like, almost like amoebic blob that takes over the queer sort of whatever.
It has.
So let us know about your opinions on internalized homophobia, and I will on that episode obviously be going off. Okay. Holy shit. Am I canceled? A good question. Let me know if I'm canceled, and we'll see you next week, hopefully.
Okay, bye.
Selling a little? Or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.